Think about a Tucumcari compact. Tucumcari was founded on, you know, it was a railroad town. A town that was built up primarily to service the railroad. Now, it was also along Route 66, so it had kind of a dual role. Of course, Route 66 went right next to the railroad. That kind of what came together. But the railroad no longer needs Tucumcari. I don't know how many jobs in Tucumcari are actually tied to the railroad anymore. I think it might be just maybe 4, 5, or 6. Most of the businesses in Tucumcari at that time and for many years thereafter were local businesses. You know, the actual owner of the business lived there. And there were people of standing. They were mostly business owners, you know. They got together in their own clubs and did their own fun things like that. And this was all a wonderful thing. Even though the ultimate importance of Tucumcari in, you know, as a railroad, it was a railroad division point, which is significant. It brought in more people, and it brought in people of significance. It was a stepping stone to becoming a major executive in the railroad industry. So there's something amazing to be said for that. Of course, the Route 66 thing. At one time, it was. You know, people started businesses based on Route 66 traffic, which has mostly died. There's a lot of tourism has tried to morph into traveler, trying to keep the traveler off the road a little bit. Come see our museum, come see our town, come see this, come see that. And to be honest, I don't, you know, that's something cute that I think is worthless by and large. And then, of course, you know, there was Route 66 for a long time. Tucumcari is a very stretched-out town for the simple reason that a lot of commerce tended toward the edges of it that touched what became Interstate 40. And still, it still does. Of course, one of the biggest problems is, you know, people from town have to do some heavy-duty lifting to get themselves out to the old truck terminal on the west of the town, because it's a good 5-6 miles out from town. You really, you know, to be honest, you really need to have a vehicle to work out there. That was a planning decision choice that I think was ill-timed. It was all about how many off-ramps could you get from the interstate. One of them is absolutely unwanted. When you're coming from the west, you get off, you get dumped into what was hoped would be a rather exclusive a rather exclusive part of Tucum Carry. And the problem is although it has really easy on and off from the interstate, you get a lot of trucks on it. And you're constantly finding the fact that trucks are trying to wind their way basically through a really tight little residential. It's not really a residential area, but a little tight residential place. And it's terrible. If I was a planner these days, I would eliminate that exit altogether. But it did put a crossing across the interstate, which we don't have very many of at all. There's basically 1, 2, 3, and an underpass. 4. Anyway. So Tucum Carry has gradually gotten smaller from its heyday where Tucum Carry itself had probably close to 9,000 people, and the greater Quake County area might have had close to 15,000 or 20,000 people. It's now down to Quake County has less than 10,000. I mean, you know, above 9,000, probably. And the city of Tucum Carry itself only has something under 5,000. But everybody's always trying to revise it up. Its population isn't particularly useful as a measure of anything, because Tucum Carry now is basically full of old people that just live there, and they, you know, from more prosperous times. Just a thin group of school teachers and people kind of toward the middle, which, you know, if they had gumption, they would have gone someplace else. And their kids, which is a very dwindling group. The school classrooms could keep getting smaller and smaller. If you drive around town and look at all the either empty or burned out houses and businesses, you should get the real sense of what it is. It's a burned out landmine aftermath of a place. It was, you know, is anybody's fault? Did anybody do anything bad? You know, the city has used tax money, and taxes in Tucum Carry are rather high comparatively. It's used its tax money to try to bring in industry, try to give us something to do. Usually gets taken to the cleaners somehow. And that's kind of been the story of it. Different fly-by-night operations who said, yeah, if you give us some money and you give us a negative tax, basically, is what they usually are offered, you know, we'll come and we'll do something there. And usually it's just a fly-by-night operation. They'll kind of set up a doing something. The city will try to sue them because of breach of contract or something. Mostly just find out that these people were shysters and they already took all the money they needed and they had no intention of setting up anything, probably. They just go from different little town, different little town, and take advantage of them. And can I be honest? I The thing is I have to name names sometimes. I think that Doug Quarles is that quasi kind of a person. He comes in, he does his artwork, and I'm not saying yay or nay to his artwork. I think we probably have artists the same caliber locally that we don't have to. We don't have to we don't have to bring in snake oil salesmen. And of course we all say, oh, this is something you want to do, come and see our murals. And there are murals, and you can come see them. You notice that when he did a mural, sometimes he would come back later and he would paint over them and say, no. It says, this is a deal I made with this particular person, you know, and that person would sell that building. And part of the sale would be, hey, there's the mural on the side of it. It creates a little traffic, or it should. And boy, Quarles would come in and say, no, no, no. And he'd paint right over it, just paint it with nothing. Says, if that person, you know, if that's part of the sale of that business, he didn't get a cut of the sale because that building became, quote, his canvas. You know, he was off that. And the funny thing was, he got money from all kinds of different things to do this, but he still asserted his weird ownership over it. Now I think it's not a problem because he has moved on to better things, and of course he totally ignores Tucum Carey now. Although I'm sure when he tries to sell what he's done, he shows pictures and says all the great things he did for Tucum Carey, and then he pulled up stakes and he was gone. That, you know, and that's just, you know, is he a good guy or a bad guy? Hard to say. Is it kind of a snake oil salesman thing? Yeah. You're going to be the great mural city of the Southwest. And the funny thing was, he did that in every little town. And he tried to, I don't know if he really tried. And it became obvious after a while that this was just his shtick. He was using old buildings as canvases for his art, and he got to access some city money to do that. He got to access some state money to do that. Very interesting. You know, this isn't, and you go, so what does he end up being? And you go, well, he's a smart snake oil salesman. You go, that's okay. He ultimately decided to leave those murals behind, which I think was a smart move, because number one, you need to move on. Number two, don't think you're going to keep making money off the murals that you make. You know, he kind of wanted to become an art dealer too. You know, every time every time that building changes hands, every time it gets a new tenant, he expected to get some money for it because, you know, he considered himself maybe a part owner of the campus. So, yeah, and you go, see, it says this is what places like Tucum Carey fall into. Also, I think Tucum Carey tends to do whatever Albuquerque does. Whatever rules Albuquerque puts in place, Tucum Carey tends to just follow. Even if it's a silly thing, given the ability to police it, it tends to be really spotty, and there's really no funds to really do a lot of enforcement of anything besides just trying to keep people from killing each other. You know, we actually have a code enforcement person. They come around on occasion And they give out tickets. I almost got a ticket for, which I was going to reject because I'm not the, you can go and get gripey at the owner. It says, all I'm doing is I pay the tax so that I can have it for storage, so I can use it for storage. It says, I'm not really interested in, doing anything better than that. So it looks like a house. I still maintain it as if it were a house, but it's not a house. But anyway. But to say, now that things have changed, I said, okay, most of the businesses in town now are not owned locally. They might have a little manager locally, but they don't pay them too much. They certainly, it's basically I'm going to pay a little bit more than minimum wage. And, it isn't really like, I am the manager of such and such business, and you go, who cares? Says, the average school teacher makes more than you do. We should look at them more as the people that should be running the place. So I was thinking of how you could steer things differently. And of course, I'm a Liberty guy. There aren't rentals in Tucumcari. There are houses that aren't being dwelled in. And that usually the people who own those houses do very little to keep them up at all. I would love some Habitat for Humanity thing to come through Tucumcari, that we need to buy up various properties, reset their market value. That's probably the biggest problem in Tucumcari is now they've just kind of let weird market forces prevail, and a lot of pricing in Tucumcari is set by other places. Well, it should cost at least as much as this kind of a house in Clovis or someplace else. You go, well, Clovis has got some stuff going on. It's of the same. I mean, it's got the same kind of issues the Tucumcari does, from having very few local businesses left. Almost all the businesses are now big chains, which have no particular ties to location at all. And even their best paid people, their managers, stuff like that, they in no way contribute or become a big element in the community. They're just another schlub. And often managers will be brought in from other places and will only be there temporarily as a responsibility of getting maybe a better position at the corporate level. And we are somewhat hard pressed to base it simply on, I was just thinking of basing it on how much money a household has as to how much clout it should have in your community. But I've been thinking of this idea of if we were trying to make Tucumcari more homey, more appropriate for the people who live here. Now, I can't do anything about your neighbors. We're going to have to get rid of housing stock. And knowing that things are going to be the way things are. If you sell houses cheap, my advice is don't fix them up too much. Just make them presentable and discount saleable. Because to be honest, the people in Tucumcari aren't going to really be able to hang on to these things. What we really need to do is do a massive reset. Patch it up, fix it up, put a cheap roof on it, make it so it can be sold as a real-life house that you can move into. So I was thinking of trying to make kind of a procedural thing. And yeah, maybe buy up houses and sell them so cheaply that it resets the property value. Is that how it works? How are property values determined? And how can you change current city ordinances to make it so that people can take advantage of current stock? You're going to have to go through a lot of pain and torture to get the water service taken care of, to do things like that. Maybe the Tucumcari Revivification League. It's not a restoration. So it's not a re-anything. What do you call it? What's the term for what you would do? That way people could donate. Your big thing is to send off basically postcards to people who want to donate their dwelling, their house, maybe even land, and to have it refurbished sufficiently enough for sale, to bring it up to saleable condition. And I'm thinking that it would be some kind of, it might need to be a nonprofit, because the stuff is donated. It's not like, no, we're not going to buy it. You can donate it. So are you tired of paying property taxes and not making any money off of your property? We'll take it off your hands. I like the idea. I keep coming back to the revivification thing. You know? Who would do it? Just do it as a business. But then who would donate? What was it? Yeah, I don't really know if I want to turn into some kind of weird organization. Because what I need to do is I need to indemnify everybody involved that they're not going to be stuck holding the purse. I don't want to make it socialistic. I want these guys to own the places that that they're moving into. I guess you could do that with a nonprofit. You know, I still think you would need to say, yeah, this needs to be donated. In fact, here's the piece of paper. You know, all you have to do is sign it and get it notarized, and we'll proceed. There's got to be something along those lines that could be put to use that way. I have to look that up. I have to look and see the kind of paperwork needed for donating a house to another person. Or if it just needs to be a quick claim deed. What are you doing? Oof, I'm not doing so well. So yeah, that sounds like it might work. All right, that's all I got. Talk to you later.